bichiamo medinde ujirako kwesi ra nehempata akan eneye ujira da bendine ujirapo apongmaina maruka etifimu. I'm the ujirapo of the Alpamu Nation North America. My name is ujirapo kwesi ra nehempata akan. This is ujira. May I say for everybody checking us out, let me get a couple of things in order. I'm going to open up the chat room. In the meantime, you can get your questions ready and also check out the text itself. We'll be going over Afuraka, Afuraikae, the origin of the term Africa. You can download the PDF version of the book, the e-book. It's a free download. Some of you also have the soft cover version, so we're going to be going through that text. For those who are entering the chat room, if you want to ask questions, you must log in order to ask questions in the chat. And I see we have some callers already. So if you have any questions, you can send your questions in the chat now if you want, and we're going to go through this information. I just want to send out a message right quick to let people know where we're on, and then we're going to get started. And in the meantime, if you can hear me in the chat, you can hear me clearly, just send me a quick message so that we can just want to make sure people can hear. So just send me a quick message in the chat room saying you can hear me clearly. I think everything is straight. And just let me send this message real quick, and we'll be getting started. In the meantime, we do have some updates as I'm sending these messages out. June 22nd, we will be in Camp Springs, Maryland, giving our presentation on Nanasom, Afuraikani, Afuraikaitni, ancestral religion in America, and we will be talking about the nature and function of ancient authentic Afuraikani, Afuraikaitni, or African ancestral religion as we have inherited our tradition. Real ancestral religion deals with our capacity to harmonize with Nyamewa, Nyame, or Amenet, Amen, the Supreme Being, through the agency of the Abosom and the Nananom and Samapo, Jakan terms for the deities, the spirit forces in creation, and the honorable or spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors. And that process revolves around our Kra, our Okrawa, our soul, our divine consciousness, our Ka and Kayat in ancient Kemetan. Every group on the continent has a term in their language for these different concepts and these different divinities. We in North America, we have inherited our ancient, authentic ancestral religion, Afuraikani, Afuraikaitni ancestral religion, via blood transmission directly from our ancestresses and ancestors. We have inherited the culture. We brought it with us during the Musuo Kesie, the great perversity, which is an Akan term for Musuo Kesie is a term in Akan culture for the great perversity, the enslavement era. When we came forced to migrate over here, we carried our culture with us. The forces in nature that we were assigned to pre-incarnation before we incarnated into the wombs of our mothers, those Arbosom are still connected to us, were still connected to us, are still connected to us. The ancestresses and ancestors, the Nananom and Samapo that we were assigned to pre-incarnation before we incarnated into the womb of our mothers were still connected to us and are still connected with us. They replenish their energy and they replenish their guidance in every generation. So we have never lost the culture. We are not dependent on anyone outside of ourselves, whether they're from the continent, from the Caribbean, from South America, anywhere, to embrace our authentic, ancestrally inherited ancestral religion. So we talk about Nanasom in general, Afurakani, Afurakani ancestor religion in general and its varied expression from that of ancient Kanat or the Kanit land, Nubia, and Kemet, so-called Egypt, to the various cultures on the continent where we migrated from Kanat and Kemet to West, Central, South, North, and East Afuraka, Afurakai thousands of years ago, and we continued the culture in the form of Yakan, in the form of the Ewe, in the form of the Fon, in the form of the Yoruba people, in the form of the Igbo, in the form of the Dogon, in the form of the Bakongo, the Lobi, Chokwe, Bambara, various groups, Fang and so forth, Basa, Fula, various groups. We migrated from that ancient culture. The culture was established over 40,000 years ago, according to our own ancestresses and ancestors and the records that they left us with, and their communication with us via ancestral communication on a consistent basis. So we migrated from the Hopi region, the Hopi River region, or the Nile Valley region, migrated to North, Central, South, East Afuraka, Afurakai, those of us who came to West and Central Afuraka, Afurakai were then taken and forced to come to North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe. So we still carry the same culture. We're the same blood, same culture. So we talk about Nanasom, Afurakani, Afurakai, and ancestral religion in general, and also in particular with regard to us here in America and how we can restore that ancestral religious practice from within our blood circle, directly connected to our ancestresses and ancestors, our direct blood ancestresses and ancestors, and how that is the only way we can legitimize our cultures through our direct blood circle. We cannot legitimize the practice of our culture by looking outside of our blood circle. So we're going to be dealing with that. Nanasom, Afurakani, Afurakani, ancestral religion, June 22nd. It is an Akwesida, a Sunday. It's also an Akwesiadai, a special ancestral observance, which is every sixth Akwesida, or every sixth Sunday in Akan culture. For many Akan people, millions of Akan people, we celebrate Akwesiadai every sixth Sunday. And this particular date, June 22nd, falls on one of the Akwesiadai dates, so it's an ancestral observance in Akan culture. Also, it's the second day of the summer solstice, so it converges. The summer solstice, the Mesura, the birth of Ra, Mesuraet, birth of Raet, also a sacred Sunday, Akwesiadai, and the beginning of the summer season. And we will be moving throughout the country during the summer, taking the culture, the information, the knowledge of Nanasom, Afurakani, Afurakaitni, ancestral religion, the Afurakani, Afurakaitni people nationwide and then beyond the borders of this nation. We just confirmed a date for July 5th in Hartford, Connecticut. Look on the website later tonight when we put the information, the details about that. We'll be posting that soon, but it will be on July 5th in Hartford, Connecticut, June 22nd in Camp Springs, Maryland. You can look on the website for that information. It's already posted. Look on ojiafo.com for that. And we're also working on a date for the following week, the June 28th weekend. We're trying to confirm some venues in Las Vegas, Nevada, so we will be updating you on that. So, okay, so we just sent out the information. And again, if people in the chat, just send me a message right quick. Let me know you can hear me clearly. I don't think there's anything wrong with the audio. I just wanted to make sure. And this is the last message we're going to send out, and we'll get going. And you can pull out the text. Afuraka, Afuraka is the origin of the term Africa. Okay. So that was one hit, and we got one more message, and we'll be done. And again, for those who, if you have some questions you've been wanting to ask about, been waiting to ask about, post information in the chat real quick, and we'll get it going. All right. Okay, this is the last message, and we'll get straight. We were running behind a little quickly because we wanted to confirm that date in Connecticut before we started the show because we didn't want to lose any more time in confirming the flight, reserving the flight, so we just did that. All right, so let's get into the text. This is a very important text. It's one of our seminal works. There's been a great deal of misinformation regarding the origin of the term Africa. Now, of course, the misinformation comes from the whites and their offspring. Their goal, of course, is to make us continue to be misinformed about our identity. If you don't understand your identity, then you don't understand how you are to function, what you are to accept, what you are to reject, who you are to accept, who you are to reject, and so forth. Then you will accept things, objects, deeds, entities, individuals, and groups that will cause you to be engaged in self-destructive behavior and perpetuate your own enslavement from the inside while they are focused on continuously enslaving us from the outside. So identity is key. Names are key. Names are critical. A name is a specific configuration of sound vibration. Sound vibrations carry energy. Sound waves carry energy. We can feel sound waves when people sing, speak, when you hear music coming from speakers, people driving down the street in their cars, you can feel the vibrations moving. Sound vibrations can destroy things. We know that loud sounds can cause glass to shatter. Sound vibrations carry power. That's the original power, vibration. So when you have a specific configuration of sound vibrations that are in harmony with the specific configuration of your spirit, then you strengthen yourself every time you ingest that configuration of sound vibrations. It's a literal, measurable, quantifiable process. If you have discordant sound vibrations, a collection of discordant sound vibrations that you attempt to ingest spiritually, that's no different than trying to ingest food that's poisonous, that's not good for you. You take the food in or you drink something, some liquid that's poisonous, and it causes you problems because it's not in harmony with your digestive processes. The same thing with sound vibrations. You take in a collection of sound vibrations that are discordant, not in harmony with the movement of your sum-sum, your spirit, then it causes discordance or discordant energy within your spirit. Therefore, it affects your adrenaline, your mind. When it affects your mind negatively, then you engage in negative behavior, self-destructive behavior, which is self-destructive to you and those who are connected to you. And then you also open yourself up to receive individuals and entities and their behaviors that normally you would reject, which also is self-destructive. So you receive things from the outside that are destructive, and you maintain perverse, discordant ideas, discordant desires, discordant thoughts, discordant intentions, and discordant actions based on ingesting a discordant configuration of sound vibration. So if you embrace a name physically, just on an individual level, a European name, an Arabic name, a so-called Hebrew name, an Islamic name, Hindu names, any name that's not Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, what you're consciously doing is when somebody projects that ball of energy towards you, that collection of sound vibrations, which is a discordant, unified force of energy. You receive that discordant energy, those discordant vibrations, you process them, you hold on to it, it creates discordance within you, but you accept it, and then you retransmit it. You process discordance, you allow it to infect your spirit, and then you retransmit it back to the person. That's what you're constantly doing. It's no different than somebody breathing cigarette smoke in your face, and instead of you waving it away, you take a deep breath and pull it in. So now you have the secondhand smoke. Thousands of people die from secondhand smoke, lung cancer that's a result of secondhand smoke. Thousands of people develop lung cancer, people who have never smoked a day in their lives, but they develop lung cancer and they die because they live with people who smoke and they receive that secondhand smoke, or they work in places, restaurants and so forth, where people are smoking. They take in that smoke and they die from that. Just like that happens physically, taking in something poisonous, accepting it within your lungs, within your heart, within your bloodstream, and trying to function off of that fuel, so to speak. The same thing with discordant vibrations. When you take a collection, you inculcate it within your being, within your spirit, and you attempt to use that discordant energy as fuel to function, it simply creates discordance in your mind, in your spirit, and you function in a discordant fashion, and it's self-destructive. So we have a collective soul name, as we would say in our Akan culture, Kradin, soul's name, Kwesi, Kojo, Kwame, Ama, Abena, Bena, the so-called Dadin or day names are all actually Akradin or soul's names, the names of the soul of the person. Just like we have individual Akradin, soul names, we also have a collective Kradin or a collective soul name. And that name of the continent, and therefore with respect to us, is Akuraka, Akuraikai, the male and female titles for the first land, the land of the creator and creatress, the original land, the divine land. And it's Apurakanu and Apuraikaitnut. We are children or offspring, new or newt of the divine land, the original land, the land of the creator and creatress. So we go into detail about this in the text, and we show how we have been misinformed about the origin of the name. The whites and their offspring have given about seven different possibilities of where the name came from. They typically try to say that the name comes from non-Afurakani, non-Afurakaitni people. Of course, that's not accurate, but this is what they would like to teach. They would like us to believe that we were named after white people, non-black people, and we're still calling ourselves by a name that was created by our enemies. That makes us appear to be enslaved mentally. Many black people have heard or read white people teaching this nonsense, and therefore what they have done is repeated this nonsense. Now, some black people repeat it out of ignorance because they've read, for example, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organizations essays dealing with the origin of the term Africa. They've read that information. They've read excerpts from it online or variations of it, you know, excerpted from it online, and they just repeat the nonsense. Of course, it's repeated in our schools, but some people repeat it out of ignorance. Some people, of course, repeat it because it's political. Some Negroes are involved in pseudo-religion, false religion. They worship the whites and their offspring, so they're Muslims, or they're Hebrews, so-called Hebrews, or they're Christians, or they're Moors, or they're engage in some form of Hinduism, Vedanta, Buddhism, so-called Black Buddhism, Sufism, Hermeticism, all kinds of nonsense. And because they've embraced pseudo-religious culture and false religions and embraced false characters who never existed, such as Jesus, Yeshua, Muhammad, Buddha, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Moses, Aaron, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, all of these characters, none of these characters existed, Brahmin and so forth, since they've embraced that nonsense as agents of the whites and their offspring, their goal and their job is to continue to enslave the minds of the people. They are overseers on the plantation of the whites and their offspring. So just like the so-called slave master would punish those who were enslaved until we rose up and killed the so-called slave master, he would direct his overseers to punish and enslave, perpetuate the suffering of the people enslaved. And he would, you know, pay the overseer to do so. Not necessarily in money, but give him a little bit hotter food or a little bit, you know, less holy shirt or a pair of pants or sleep in a little bit less cold hut, so to speak. And that's all the overseer would need in order to continue to keep oppression on the other enslaved Afro-Arakani, Afro-Arakani people on behalf of the so-called slave master. You have so-called Christians, black Christians, Hebrews, Muslims, Moors, and all these pseudo-New Age spiritualists, pseudo-metaphysicians, black atheists, all of this nonsense promoting the false idea and the false information. Some of them do it out of ignorance. Some of them do it deliberately. So what we have done is we've taken all these various false etymologies. We've exposed the fact that none of them actually are the origin of the term Africa. We also show where these terms actually come from, and all of them can actually be found in the language of ancient Kemet. So these are not different terms from different languages from all over the world, from different times in truestory, all pointing to the origin of the term Africa. They're actually all terms from the language of ancient Kemet. We're going to get into that. And we also show in the Medutu where the term actually comes from. Afuraka and Afuraikaet simply means the ka, the land, the high land, the first land of Afura, which is the title of the creator. The kaet, the feminine version of land, meaning a high land, a sacred land, of Afuraet, a feminine term of the creatress, one of the titles of the creatress. Ra and Raet are the creator and creatress. They are called Nyonkumpong and the Nyonkumton in the Akan tradition. They are called Odumare and Oshumare in the Yoruba tradition. They're called Da and Aido, Kwedo in the Vodun tradition. And all across the continent, everybody has a term for the creator and creatress, male and female forces in creation, abosom divinities who work together to create and sustain the created universe. Ra and Raet are servants of and subordinate to Amen and Amenet. Amen and Amenet called Nyame and Nyamewa in the Akan tradition. They are the supreme being together. The great father and the great mother function together as one divine unit. The supreme being, just like a male and female, functions as a unit to create a child. That comes from the foundational relationship of Amen and Amenet, who function together as one unit to create and sustain the forces in nature, who also, Ra and Raet being two of them, create the universe. So they are the great being. Ra and Raet are the creative power. So that's key as well. Amen, Ra is a title of Amen. Amenet, Raet is a title of Amenet. However, Ra and Raet are separate and distinct divinities that serve Amen and Amenet. So there's a difference between the creator and creatress and the supreme being. There's a hierarchical relationship. Of course, the whites and their offspring don't teach that, and many of the people who have embraced pseudo-notions of spirituality from the whites and their offspring and blacken it up and call it Afrocentric African spirituality and so forth, they continue to teach monotheism or some version of that nonsense under the guise of African spirituality, and they don't understand the distinction between the supreme being and the creator and creatress, and they attempt to conflate the two and make them just titles of one and the other, which is totally inaccurate. So we talk about Afuraka, Afuraikai, the land of the creator, land of the creatress. So what we're going to do first, when we look in the text, we're going to go in the back first, and then we're going to go forward. First, we want to deal with some specific Medutu, just so you can see. So for those who actually have the soft cover version of the book, or you have You can look in the PDF version, the ebook version, which is on the website. In the appendix and on the front cover, we have a couple of images. We have three images. The first image is an image directly from the Hunefer Shefdu, or the Hunefer papyrus. That particular version of the Runu Emheru, or the so-called Egyptian Book of the Dead, of the Egyptian Book of Coming Forth by Day. That's a direct image from that text. And it spells out Akharkai. That's what it spells out. And the reason we have that is from chapter 17, plate 5 of the Hunefer papyrus, talking about Ra setting upon the Kai, the high land, Ka or Kai, the high land, at the beginning of creation, when the first land was raised up from beneath the surface of the water, the first raised land or the first hill, high land. It was the only land existent on the surface of the planet. The rest of the planet was covered with water. It's called the primordial mound very often when you read about the theology and the cosmology of Kemet. The first raised land, the first land to raise up, that Ra and Ra caused to rise up from the surface, from under the surface of the water, to become the first landmass of Earth. It's called Akharkai. It's directly in the text, specifically referring to the Kai, the high land, that Ra sits upon at the beginning of creation to create the world. That's a direct textual reference. We also show in part 4 of the series the Ani Shefdu, or the Ani papyrus, same chapter, chapter 17. Different people who made their transition in Kemet, they will leave a copy of the Runu Pert Emheru, or the Book of Coming Forth by Day, with the deceased. So this is why, of course, the White Nile Spring called it the Egyptian Book of the Dead, because it was found with the dead in their tomb. In the papyrus of Ani, you will find this text in chapter 17, plate 7. And we actually have the entire text, the translation, and the transliteration of this section on page 40 of the book. So that's chapter 17, plate 7 in the papyrus of Ani. It's chapter 17, plate 5 in the papyrus of Hunefer. On the front cover of the book and in the appendix, we showed a color copy of the actual text from the papyrus of Hunefer, because it was just a nice color copy of the text. On page 40, we show the chapter 17, plate 7 of the papyrus of Ani, and we do the transliteration. So let's just read the transliteration of this particular section. It says, I am Ra in rising, his in beginning, rule this as he. Saying, I am Ra rising in the beginning, ruling this region is he. Then the question is asked, who then is he? Ra it is in the beginning. He rose within Hinensu as a king and sovereignty within existence. Not yet had come into being the pillars of Shu, meaning before the pillars of Shu had come into being, which is the fourth support of the heavenly realm. It says, not come into being the pillars of Shu, or before the pillars of Shu came into being, he existed upon the high land that is within Kemenu. I am the great God. Now the section that says before the pillars of Shu came into being, so what we're talking about here is when Ra is creating the universe and Ra'at is creating the universe, first they direct Atem and Asaset Nebedetepet to complete the finishing touches of the universe, basically. Tem means to finish, to complete, to bring to an end. So the divinity Atem, that's his function in creation. And he, along with his wife, Asaset Nebedetepet, also called the hand of the god, they unite and they give birth to Shu and Tafnu, expansion and contraction. Shu and Tefnut give birth to Geb and Nut. Geb is the earth crust divinity. Nut is the sky divinity. You will see, we'll show it in the book, but you'll see Geb laying on the ground as the earth, the crust of the earth, and then you'll see the Abosom, the female Abosom deity, Nut, bent over Geb. That's the night sky or the Nut sky. You'll see the stars throughout her body. When you look up in the sky, it looks like a great dark blue or black canopy bent over the earth. And when you see that representation in Kemet, you see the great goddess Nut bent over the earth deity, the male earth divinity, the crust of the earth. There's a difference between the crust of the earth and the entire planet earth. So Geb is dealing with the crust of the earth, and you see the great goddess bent over in the as a black, you know, figure or a bluish figure, her body with stars inside of her body. Geb and Nut, earth and sky. They then give birth to Asar, Aset, Set, and Nebethet. Asar, the black soil substance of earth, Kam-Ur, the great black one, Aset, river waters of earth, Set, the red land of earth, including not only the desert, but the red clay, Nebethet, the rain waters of earth. Then, of course, Asar and Aset give birth to Heru, Set and Nebethet give birth to Anpu, and so forth. But when it's talking about the pillars of Shu, when the heavens and earth are fashioned, Shu and Tefnut give birth to Geb and Nut, earth, crust, and sky. Then eventually you'll see pictures of Shu standing in between. You'll see earth, which is Geb, laying on the ground, the earth divinity. You'll see Nut bent over Geb as like the canopy. And then you'll see a figure standing in between them holding up the goddess Nut and pushing her up into the sky. That's Shu, which is her father, pushing her up into the sky. Expansion. Shu is expansion. Tefnut is contraction. So Shu is in the middle of the earth and the sky. When you see that going from the nighttime into the day, at nighttime, it appears that the dark sky and the earth are connected to one another. The black sky and the earth are embracing one another. But as it gets closer to the day, it appears that the darkness begins to push up, and then there's a light expansion in between earth and sky, and which later becomes the light blue sky, of course. That expansion of the dark canopy being pushed incrementally up higher and higher until it's pushed away from earth is like Shu, the divinity Shu, expansion, separating Geb, his son, from Nut, his daughter, and separating the two during the day. And then Geb and Nut come back at nighttime and they embrace again. And then at daytime, of course, they separate again. When the daytime is coming, when it's going from nighttime to day, then Shu gets in between and he begins to force Nut up. And they talk about the pillars of Shu raising the sky up and creating a space for the sun to shine, and therefore it's the daytime. In the text, when it says, before the pillars of Shu came into being, before Shu separated the dark sky from the earth for the very first time, for there to be a sunrise for the first time in the creation of the world, the mound was already forced up from under the surface of the water. So earthquakes on the ocean floor, originally the earth is covered by water. And of course we taught that in ancient Kemet, and of course it's taught the same way in classes dealing with geology and other sciences today. The earth is over 71% water, about 29% is landmass, the surface of earth. Originally, the planet is covered by water. Earthquakes on the ocean floor cause a portion of the ocean floor to surge upward and break through the surface of the water, and that becomes the first landmass. We, of course, taught that same thing, except we simply added who was responsible for the earthquakes on the ocean floor. Who was responsible for that energy surge to cause ocean floor, a portion of it to surge upwards and break through the surface of the water to become the first landmass of the planet. We talk about Ra and Ra'et causing that process, the creator and creatress, divine living energy animating the created universe, moving through the black substance of space, penetrating and animating the stars, including our sun and the various planetary orbs, that spiritual force that animates all created entities, that is the force that penetrated the primordial earth, caused separation and development within the primordial earth, and causes the rumbling, the fire at the core of earth, to also cause rumblings on the ocean floor and cause a portion of that landmass to surge upward, become the first landmass of the planet Earth, the high land, the first high land. That's what happened. That high land came up first through the water, and after that, then later on, shoot, because now that you have land, and later on it's fashioned in a specific way by the divinity Ptah, after that happens, then you can have shoot separate the land from the dark sky, force the dark sky up, and have a space wherein the sun can rise, quote-unquote, and you can have the first day, the first light, the first sunrise in the creation of the universe. So this is why the text says, before all of that happened, before the pillars of Shu came into existence, before Shu was able to separate earth from sky, Ra had already caused the first landmass to rise up above the surface of the water, and he existed upon the high land. He rested upon the high land. That particular phrase, he exists upon the high land, or he who exists upon the high land, is literally Af Perakaka in the papyrus of Ani and Af Perakai in the papyrus of Hunefer. It's specifically talking about the Kai or Ka, the high land, upon which Ra sits at the creation of the first landmass of Earth. That first landmass is where we call Afrakai or Afrakai or Afraka today. So let's get into some details dealing with that. We just wanted to show that specific reference. That's one reference. Let's also show the other reference on the front cover of the book. Comes from the Temple of Aset in Paraka, so-called Phile. And it's Afraka. That's what it actually spells. There are different versions of that terminology. It's talking about the landmass surrounded by water. Ah, or also pronounced Ah, which is called an island, but also a landmass, specifically an ant landmass surrounded by water. In ancient Kemet, Ah, or Ah, is a landmass surrounded by water. In English, they translate that particular medu as an isle or an island. An isle or an island. An isle, his term isle comes from Iol, A-U in ancient Kemet, which is actually the Medut that you're looking at, which is a landmass surrounded by water. Iol or Au becomes Iol in English, and Iol, land or island, in English as well. We didn't call it an island, we called it an Au, which means a landmass surrounded by water. That means any landmass surrounded by water. Whether it's a small landmass that in English would be called an island, or a large landmass that in English would be called a continent. A continent is a landmass surrounded by water. When the first landmass was raised up by Ra and Ra'et, become the first landmass of Earth, it was the only landmass in existence. It was a landmass surrounded by water. It was the continent of Ahraka, as spelled directly in the text in the Temple of Paraka or Phile, Temple of Aset in Paraka or Phile. So we're going to get into that as well as we go through. We just wanted to show you why we had those symbols on the front cover of the text, because it's actually spelling out in the Medutu the term, the variations, Ahraka, meaning the landmass upon which Ra creation of the world, and Afraka, the landmass surrounded by water, the high land, the primordial mound, the first land created at the beginning of creation. This is Afraka or Afraka, Afharkai, the land of the creator and creatress. So now let's get into some of these details. Let's first get into some of the false etymologies propagated by the whites and their offspring and repeated foolishly by black people who consider themselves intelligent or consider themselves so-called scholars, elders, elderesses, who even when they've been confronted with accurate information, some of them continue to lie about the information. So you have some people who propagate this information out of ignorance. You have other people who propagate the information out of being agents of the whites and their offspring. But the ones who propagate the information out of ignorance, you have a couple of classes. You have one class who they just don't have the right information. They've never been given the right information. They've read a lot of nonsense that seemed to be the prevailing sentiment or consensus, so they therefore just repeat that information. Then you have another class of the people who are repeating it out of ignorance because of immaturity. They have built an identity around knowledge or information. These are individuals who, prior to studying and getting information, people never listened to what they had to say. They were not very important. These kind of people need to feel like they're important. So they've crafted a fragile identity based on them being a quote-unquote scholar or based on them being intelligent or based on them being deep or whatever. As soon as somebody gives some information that contradicts the information that they've been teaching people, that's a direct shot at their credibility. And for somebody who has a fragile ego and deep down inside are insecure, inadequate, and so forth, and their entire lives are dependent upon and focused upon making people believe that they're intelligent so that people will accept them, as soon as you have someone like that have a shot at their credibility, that's a chink in the armor, their entire identity begins to crumble, and that's when they get upset. That's when they start arguing. That's when they start typing in all caps when they're arguing with people online. That's when they start name-calling people and everything else. You're dealing with some people who are doing things out of ignorance and some people who are just simply emotionally unstable. So they're not concerned about what's true, what's accurate, what things we need to reject, what things we need to incorporate into our spirit so that we can function harmoniously. Every time you say Afuraka, Afurakaet, you're invoking the deity Ka, you're invoking the deity Kaet, who are the male and female forces that govern the black substance of space within which all things in creation operate. That's a force in nature that the whites and their offspring call dark energy and dark matter, but this is Ka and Kaet. When you speak the name Afuraka, Afurakaet, you are invoking these divinities, literally. And when you're also invoking Ra, or Afura, and you're also invoking Ra'et, Afura'et. You have shrines for Ra and Ra'et, or Afura'et, Afura'et, in your spirit and in your body. You have shrines for Ka and Ka'et within your body. Actually, your brain is the physical shrine for Ka and Ka'et. It's the seat of your Ka, your soul, your divine consciousness, your Ka'et, the female. So every time you say Afuraka, Afuraikaet, you are invoking divinities that actually govern your spirit, your ba, and your soul, your ka, your spirit, your ba'et, your soul, ka'et, the female. These things are directly related to the way we function in the world, how we interact with our children, with our significant others, those who are connected to us in the community, our capacity to live in harmony with order, and to reject disorder, or if we're not intelligent, if we're not harmonious, if we're not in tune, to begin to embrace disorder and continue perpetuate self-destructive behavior. So people who don't understand that, or they're not even concerned about that, all they're concerned about is, I just want people to believe that I'm an intelligent person. And if you shatter their credibility, that goes directly to their identity, then they don't want to have anything to do with what's true, what's accurate, what's harmonious, what's functional culturally and spiritually. They just want to maintain their identity and their reputation. So they will actually dismiss accurate information and continue to tell lies. So we put this information out just to tell the truth to black people in general. One of the residual effects is it exposes the people who are deliberate liars, but it also exposes the people who are simply acting out of ignorance, immaturity, and people who are emotionally unstable and constantly misinforming our people. So let's look at some of the misinformation and the false etymologies, and then we're going to go into the cosmology that we just briefly touched on. One of the major falsehoods that's being propagated and continues to be propagated is that the continent was named after a male named Africanus. Now, there are two males in so-called history or true story named Africanus who are relevant to the discussion. There's Leo Africanus, who lived a little over 500 years ago, and there's Scipio Africanus, who lived a couple thousand years ago. Sometimes the people who are misinformed conflate these two because they don't know that these are two different individuals. So you will hear individuals say that Africa was named after Leo Africanus, who lived 500 years ago, which is foolish, but people just don't understand that this is a different individual. Leo Africanus is somebody who traveled in Afuraka, Afuraikai, and wrote a text called His History of Africa, and he was writing a number of different things. In fact, he was speculating 500 years ago on the origin of the term Africa, and he's one of the ones who put forth the false etymologies that possibly it came from Afrique, the Greek term meaning not cold, or Afreka, meaning the sunny land in Roman. He also said that the Arabians and the Ethiopians refer to the continent as Al-Kabulan, Lam with an M. This is the source from which many people believe that Al-Kabulan was actually an ancient indigenous name for the continent, which it is not. But that information comes from Leo Africanus in his work. We mentioned that in the book, and we cite the work in the book. So there are some people who believe that Dr. Binyakinen made up the name Al-Kabulan because they could never find out the source for the name. They never found out where he got it from. They just knew in his books he said that Al-Kabulan was an ancient indigenous name for the continent, and they couldn't find out where it came from. We're showing that it comes from the work of Leo Africanus that was published in 12,526 in the Gregorian calendar, 1526, nearly 500 years ago, and this was a term he relates that the Arabians and the Ethiopians called the continent. We go into detail in the text, and which we will get into later, about the origin of the term Al-Kabulan, which is actually an Arabic corruption. It is not an ancient term. It's not an indigenous term for the continent. It is an Arabic corruption. So we get into that. So that's one thing. However, so Leo Africanus is one person. He, of course, did not name the continent. He only lived 500 years ago, and the continent, of course, was already named. The person that they're really talking about is Scipio Africanus, who invaded northern Afuraka, Afuraikai, a couple of thousand years ago and won battles and took over a certain region at that particular time. Now, his last name was not Africanus before he invaded Africa, or Afuraka, Afuraikai. We've talked about this before, but we go into it in the book. His name was Publius Cornelius Scipio, and he also had a brother, and his brother's name was Lucius Cornelius Scipio. Now, their father's name was Publius Cornelius Scipio as well. Their grandfather's name was Lucius Cornelius Scipio, and their great-grandfather's name was Lucius Cornelius Scipio Barbatus. So as you can see, their last name was Scipio, the father's last name was Scipio, the grandfather's last name was Scipio, the great-grandfather's name was Scipio Barbatus. There was no Africanus anywhere. When Publius Cornelius Scipio invaded Afuraka, Afuraikai, and took over the northern portion that region. He took on the name Africanus because he invaded Afuraka, Afurakaido, what they would call Africa. So Europeans, when they conquered an area, they would take the name of the area that they conquered. So he became known as Scipio Africanus, the one who conquered Africa. His brother, Lucius Cornelius Scipio, invaded Asia. And when he invaded Asia and won a battle and conquered an area in Asia, he became known as Scipio Asiaticus. So one brother became Scipio Africanus, one brother became Scipio Asiaticus because he invaded Asia and conquered that area. None of the Muslims, some of the Hebrews and these other individuals, nations of gods and earths and so forth, they won't tell you that Scipio Asiaticus named the continent Asia because they foolishly want to believe that they come from Asia. And they falsely teach people that black people come from Asia and we're Asiatic. So they'll turn around and say, well, Scipio Africanus, he named the continent Africa, and therefore you name yourself after white man, but we're Asiatic. And we came up with the name Asia. Asia already existed, and Scipio invaded Asia and took on the name Asiatic. But the other Scipio, when he invaded Africa, he must have named the continent Africa after himself. That is pure foolishness. It's easily researched and investigated, but many of these people don't research. They just repeat what other people say. But then you also have people who do research, and they deliberately lie to the community because they work on behalf of the whites and their offspring. These various groups, Hebrew groups, Muslim groups, Christian groups, they're funded, they were started, founded, and are funded and supported by the whites and their offspring. So we deal with that on page 59 of the text. We lay out the family history of the individuals, Scipio Asiaticus and Scipio Africanus, to totally destroy that false etymology. Now, we also, if you look on page 60, the term afer in Kemet means to burn, to be hot. Afri means smoke or hot vapor. Afer and afri. What you'll find is the whites and offspring will say that, well, maybe one of the derivations of the term Africa comes from the Greek term afrik, which means not cold, meaning hot. We just showed afer in the Medutu, and we have the Medutu, the hieroglyphics there on page 60, meaning hot, to burn, and so forth. They also talk about, and then afri, meaning smoke, hot, vapor, and things like that. When fire is burning through matter, it creates smoke. It's burning. It's hot. When fire is burning through, or heat is moving through water, it creates smoke. It creates vapor, and so forth. Afer and afri is the origin, is connected to afra and afrait. Ra and raet operate through the sun. Of course, the hottest orb in our immediate surroundings in this part of the universe is the ball of fire, Ra, operating through, penetrating the sun, causes it to illuminate. Right? Penetrating the solar orb causes it to illuminate. When they move through that matter, they're called Afu Ra, Afu Ra. Afu Ra is the root of Afur, meaning hot, to burn and so forth. Afrai is the root of Afri, meaning smoke, hot, vapor, and so forth. This is where you get Afrik in Greek, meaning not cold. There's also the term Apreka in Latin, which they say, well, that it means the sunny land, Apreka, or Aprika. So they'll say, well, maybe it came from Latin, meaning the sunny land. We show in the text and in the Medutu, one of the titles of Ra is Pa-Ra, meaning the god Ra. The term pa is the definite article, the same as the or the in English, like the sun, the creator, pa-ra, the god Ra. Para became pronounced pre and fre in Coptic, the surviving dialect of ancient Kemet. Fre or pre, pre-ka the land of Preka is the sunny land because Ra operates through the sun. In fact, by the time you get to the Coptic era, some people would just refer to Ra or Pra or Pre as the sun. And Pre, Ka, Ka meaning land, Pre meaning Pra, or quote-unquote the sun or the sunny land. Again, it is not a Latin term. Africa is not a Latin term or Roman term meaning the sunny land. It's directly taken from a title of Ra in ancient Kemet, meaning the exact same thing. The same thing with Afrik, meaning not cold. It comes from Afrik, meaning smoke, hot, burning, vapor, and so forth. It is not a Greek term. It comes directly from ancient Kemet, and we show that in the book, in the Medutu. Let's go to the Phoenician piece. They'll say it means the Farika, meaning the land of fruit. Now, Parik or Farik, meaning fruit, produce, and so forth. Pari or Fari is the exact same term in Kemet, which means grains, fruits, seeds of any kind. Parika, meaning the land of fruit, and they're saying, suggesting that or recommending that as a specific title of the term Africa, Parika or Farika. It's not a Phoenician term. It comes directly from the Medutu of Kemet. Pari meaning, and Fari meaning fruit, grains of any kind. We also have, there's an Arabic term. There's also the term Parak or Farak, meaning to separate or divide. And they would say that it means the land that was separated or divided. Well, Parak and Farak in Kemet means to separate, to divide, to evade a calamity, and so forth. So it means the same thing. Every term that you find in the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization piece on the origin of the term Africa, whether it's Greek, Latin, Sanskrit, Arabic, Phoenician, and so forth, none of them, those terms that they put forward actually come from those languages. They're found in those languages, but the meaning and the words actually can be found in ancient Kemet. In Sanskrit, they would say it's, the root is apara, aparaka, or apara. Apara meaning the land that comes after, because according to their geography, they would say that Afuraka, Afurakai comes after, is to the west of India, so therefore it comes after India, and it's the land that comes after, apara. But actually, Peta in ancient Kemet means that which comes after, progeny, offspring, those who come after. So Peta is where the term apara in Sanskrit comes from. It's not a Sanskrit term, number one. It comes directly from ancient Kemet. And number two, it's not the origin of the term Africa. So that's another one. Ifriqiya in Arabic, meaning the queen of heaven. That's an Arabic corruption of Ifriqiya or Ifriqa in Latin. Dea Africa or the goddess Africa. We have images of coins from the time of the Emperor Hadrian showing the goddess Africa, or they call Dea Africa, the goddess Africa, reposing on a bed. She was one of the most important deities amongst the Berber people, the black people, the black Berbers, the original black Berbers of North Afuraka, Afuraika. You have the whites who invaded North Afuraka, Afuraika. Some settled in the region of Tunisia, those areas in Libya. Some, of course, settled in the areas of ancient Kemet and later became known as Arabs. And they are white invaders. The original blacks of Kemet migrated south, lived mainly in the southern part of Kemet now, and Kanit, Nubia, and, of course, many of us migrated west and central and south and ended up in West Afuraka, Afuraika, Central Afuraka, Afuraika, and South, and then some of us were taken from West to enslavement in America hundreds of years later. But just like you have white invaders in the North in Kemet today, in so-called Egypt, and they're Arabs, and they're not descended from the original people. You have whites who invaded the areas of Libya, white people who invaded northern, you know, Afrika, Afrikai. So you have a division. You have black people who live in those areas who are the original people of the areas, and then you have white people who are in control, like in Libya and Tunisia and other places. They refer to themselves as Berbers, which is a false designation, just like the white Arabs today refer to themselves as Egyptian. And they'll say, we are the ancient Egyptians. And, of course, they are not. And the whites who call themselves Berbers, they are not the original Berbers. There were black people living in those areas before white people existed on earth. So the black Berbers called the divinity, the goddess, Afri, and Afru, different variations, and Ifri, that's Afu Rae, so Afu Rae, Afri. That's what they call her, and we still call her that today. She was referred to, and when you read about her, they'll call her a sun goddess and a cave goddess. Why would Rae be called a sun goddess and a cave goddess, or Afu Rae, or Afrae, or Afrae, or Afri, or Ifri be called a sun goddess and a cave goddess? It's exactly like when you see pictures of Ra sitting in the boat of the sun, the Aten, as a hawk-headed divinity. When the sun boat sails across the sky, then that's the daytime. When the sun sets and goes into the so-called underworld, in the so-called Duat, then Ra takes on the form of a land animal. He takes on the form of a ram-headed divinity. And he, in his night boat, in the dark sun, and he's moving in the so-called underworld in the 12 hours of the night. And some of the texts that you find, the Shatn Duat, the book of what is in the Duat, sometimes they call these books the book of caverns, the holes up under the earth where the sun boat is moving in the underworld. It's the exact same thing, of course, with Ra'et. Ra and Ra'et work together. When she's moving, when the sun is moving through the sky during the daytime, she is Ra'et. When the sun moves through the caverns, into the caves, into the underworld, she is Afu Ra'et, or Afu Ra'it, Afri, sun goddess and a cave goddess. They say she's the most important divinity amongst the Berber people. Nothing could be done, as the Roman author Pliny said, nothing would be done in Africa unless they consulted the goddess Africa. They're talking about Afu Ra'et, sun goddess and cave goddess. So this is a divinity. And we're going to get into the cosmological aspect as well. But the Dea Africa in Roman becomes Afrikia in Arabic, and that's why they call her the Queen of Heaven. The Arabs didn't come up with the title Afrikia, Queen of Heaven, on their own. The Heavenly Queen is the great goddess, the great Abosom Ra'et, who is the Queen of Heaven. She's the Heri, or the Queen, she who is above, leader, while Ra is Her, or Heri, he who is above, leader, king, ruler, sovereign, and so forth. That's why he's called Af-Herkai in the papyrus of Ani, and then you also have it in the papyrus of Hunefa. So this is where the Arabic comes from. So we have these various different false derivation. Africanus, false derivation. Sanskrit, apara, a false etymology of the term. Greek and Roman, afrik, and afrika, terms that actually come from Kemet, but they're not the origins of the term. Afrikia, from Arabic, the Queen of Heaven, is a corruption of afrik, or afraet. Of course, they just corrupted that. And then you also have Parika, or Parika, from Phoenician, meaning the land of fruit. We also have that in Kemet, and it's not the origin of the term. And then Harak, or Parak, to divide, or to separate, to escape. That term in Phoenician and other related languages, so-called Semitic languages, you can find also in the language of Kemet. So none of those derivations are accurate. None of them represent the origin of the term. We have the actual Medutu representing all of those terms, that you can find in the language Kemet that are older than all of these other languages with the exact same meaning. So then now we can deal with the actual cosmology related to the term so people can see. And we detail it in the book. If anybody has any questions, you can type them in the chat. If you want to type a question in the chat or a comment, you have to log in. If you don't have a login ID, you can sign up for one very quickly. It's very simple, and you can check it out. And if anybody has any questions on the phones, you can just raise your hand, hit number one to raise your hand, and then we can see that you want to ask a question or make a comment. Okay, so let's deal with the, we briefly touched on it, let's deal with the cosmology. Let's just get into the cosmology right quick. So, in fact, let's go through the origin. We're going to talk about Amen and Amenet, the great father, the great mother. Men means stable, permanent, and abiding. So Amen and Amenet, and the T in ancient Kemet is a feminizing suffix. So, and it's the same feminizing suffix that you find in English. So, and it's a diminutive. So you have Paul, then the feminizing suffix is Paulette. If you have Anton, you have Antoinette. This is why it comes directly from the language of Kemet. You have Amen, you have Amenet. You have Ra, you have Raet. You have Ka, you have Kaet, and so forth. So the great father and the great mother, the root of the name Men is stable, permanent, and abiding. Amen also means hidden or concealed, unseen. So Amen and Amenet are the great hidden or concealed Men, stable, permanent, and abiding being, Men. That is the nature and function of the Supreme Being. They are the great hidden being, but they're the stable, permanent, abiding infrastructure that sustains all of the created universe. It is Amen and Amenet who unite to first give birth to their forces of consciousness, the capacity to shape, mold anything possible. So just like you have the capacity to close your eyes and image something, out of the darkness of your mind, you can generate an image of any form, any shape, any color, in any way. You have the capacity to do that. The reason you have the capacity to do that and shape things in your mind that later you would get the physical resources to make a reality. So just like if you decided you wanted to paint something, you can generate the image in the darkness of your mind first. Then you can get some paint and some other materials and make that spiritual image that you held in the blackness of your mind, you can make it a physical reality. You have that capacity because Amen and Amenet had that capacity, and they first generated that capacity. They generated an expansive and contractive force that allows them to manifest forms, ideas, and so forth. That was their force of consciousness. They brought forth their own forces of consciousness, male and female, expansive and contractive forces of consciousness. Just like you can lay in a bed, darkness, at night, you turn off the lights, there's no sound, there's no images or anything. Your eyes are closed, there's no movement, but then you can have a dream where you can see, experience, vivid colors, vivid sounds, images, entities, everything. If somebody walks into the room, they see nothing, they hear nothing, but within yourself, in that darkness, you're seeing forms, you're seeing images, you're seeing everything else. You have the capacity to generate luminous images in the darkness. You have that capacity, you have that consciousness, because your consciousness, your force of consciousness dwelling within your head is a little drop of consciousness from the great divine consciousness, which actually manifests as the black substance of space. That's a male and a female force. It's a thick substance of substance. The male and a female force that expands and contracts. That is Ka and Kaet. So Amen and Amenet first generated their capacity to think, their capacity to generate ideas, forms, and so forth, that was the birth of Ka and Kaet. In order to give birth to forms, you can generate forms all you want, but if you want them to become a reality, there has to be life. You have to be able to give life to them. So they gave birth, Amen and Amenet gave birth to the expansive and contractive forms of breath and expansion and contraction, which is Hehu and Hehut, or Huhua and Huhu. That's often spelled H-E-H, H-E-H-U in ancient Kemet. The expansive and contractive forms of breath and heat. Heh means breath, Hehu means breath, but it also means heat. It also means fire. So you can generate, first you have the capacity to generate forms and ideas, geometric patterns, colors, shapes, all combined in a certain way, but then you have to give expansion and contraction or life to these forms, breath to these forms. So first, Amen and Amenet create Ka and Kaet, then they create Hehu and Hehu, the expansion and contraction of these forms. Then, in order for these forms to become something, they must have energy. It's one thing to have a form. It's one thing to have it, give it vitality, but then you need energy or power to so that it can function in the universe. So they gave birth to Nu and Nut, or Nanu and Nanut, the male and female forces of movement. They're written in the Medutu with wavy lines of energy, like watery lines, wavy lines of energy. It's a water lines, but then it's electromagnetic type energy as well. Nu and Nut vibrate, and when they unite, they give birth to Ra and Ra'et, who manifest as spheres of fire and light. So the way we give an analogy to this is if you have water in a pot on the stove, and this is just a common analogy we use, you have water in a pot on the stove, the water is just sitting still, it's formless, it's colorless, and so forth. When you begin to expand and contract or apply heat, the first thing that happens is expansion and contraction. Formless, watery substance that can take any form is akin to Ka and Kaet. The male and female forces, like the black substance of space, is a formless entity, a male and female formless entity that can take any shape or take any form. When you apply heat, heh, to this formless substance in the pot, then the first thing that happens is there is expansion and contraction within the water, within the formless substance. The heat continues, and then the water begins to vibrate, and you begin to see waves. So you went from heh and hehu, the breath hehu, hehu, which sounds like our breath hehu, hehu, hehu and hehu, the male and female forces of expansion and contraction, life, breath. It causes the water to expand and contract and begin to move, but then it begins to vibrate, and you see waves of energy. That is the birth of Nu and Nut, or Nun and Nunet, the vibratory frequency, the vibratory energy in potential. Those waves begin to move all throughout the pot. First, it was a still pot of water with a flat water just not moving at all, and now because of Hehu and Hehu, that breath, that heat, it causes it to begin to wave, and now you have waves all throughout the pot, and the waves are going back and forth, carrying energy back and forth between one end of the pot to the other. That's Nun and Nunet, and the ripples in the water are the same ripples that are used to spell the names of Nun and Nunet, the same ripples that you see that manifest in the black substance of space. That great black substance becomes fluid and begins to wave and ripple. The more heat that's applied, the more they begin to wave and ripple. Then Nun and Nunet, these waves of energy unite, and they begin to ripple so rapidly, like the water in the pot, that the birth of spheres rises up out of the waves, out of the boiling water. Those spheres in the pot of water are, of course, called bubbles. So from the waves are spheres that rise up and eventually they pop. The bubbles are full of the heat and fire. The same thing happened with the black substance of space. When Nun and Nunet, the male and female energy within the black substance of space began to wave, and began to wave very rapidly, they united and gave birth to spheres within the black substance. Those spheres of fire and light popped or exploded. That was the birth of Ra and Ra'et, the first fire and light in the universe that pierces the darkness and separates light from darkness. And they came into being through the light, through the fire, through the energy, through the heat. So now you have fire and light moving through the blackness and carving out, spiraling through the blackness and carving out black spheres of energy, separating these black spheres. One of these black spheres eventually became our planet, Asaseafua, or Earth. So you have this black sphere of matter. Then the energy of Ra and Ra'et, the fire energy of Ra and Ra'et, penetrate that black sphere and cause separation and development. And the denser portions go towards the bottom, of course, and then the lighter portions become the atmosphere. You have water covering the entire planet. Then, like we said, the energy, the spirit of Ra and Ra'et, that fire and light energy penetrate the planet just like sunlight penetrates the earth and causes the water to heat up. That energy penetrates the planet, causes earthquakes on the ocean floor, causes a portion of that ocean floor to surge upward above the surface of the water and crash through the surface of the water, and that's the first landmass of the planet Earth. Because it's a high land, it's called Ka, male, and Kaet, female. A flat land is, or a plain is called Ta and Taet, which is just a flat surface, a flat land. But a high land, a raised land, is Ka or Kaet. And sometimes double is Kaka or Kakaet. This is why in the Akan language of Ghana and Ivory Coast, the term for hill or raised land is Koko, because it comes directly from the Kaka of ancient Kemet. And we talk about in the cosmology of the Akan, Afuni Koko is the name of the region that when the first people of the region that is today called Wenchi, they say that Odomankuma, when he fashioned and finished the world, they came up out of the ground. Their ancestresses and ancestors came up out of the ground in that region, and they established their capital, and they called it Afuni Koko. That's the cosmology of the Akan. It's talking about the exact same thing that we're talking about in ancient Kemet. That first raised land, the high land, is called Ka or Kaka. Koko in the Akan tradition. K or Oke in the Yoruba tradition, which means a high land, a mountain, or hill. And specifically the sacred hill, Oke Ara, in the Yoruba tradition, is defined as the Oke or the mountain or high land upon which the Orisha or the deities first descended to create the universe. So just like you have it in ancient Kemet, the first high land that rose up at the beginning of the creation of the world, you have the same thing in the Yoruba tradition, you have the same thing in the Akan tradition with the same name, same cosmology, same name. Oke Ara in Yoruba tradition, Afuni Koko in the Akan tradition. Now, when we're talking about that first landmass, called Ka, male, Kaet, female, when that first landmass rises up, and we talked about Shu separating the sky, night sky from the earth, and that becomes the blue sky, the atmosphere, which separates the dark sky from the earth during the day, and then when that blue atmosphere begins to shrink, then the night sky, Nut, unites with the black earth, Geb, and Geb and Nut are embracing again for about 12 hours of the night. And then their father comes again and separates them. The blue sky separates the night sky from the earth, and it pushes it further back up. And then we have the daytime again. So when that first landmass rolls up, then Shu had somewhere to stand upon to separate earth from sky. And when he did that, the pillars of Shu had come aboard, come into being, the supports of the sky, the pushing up of the sky. Prior to that, the first landmass had crashed through the surface of the water, the first Ka and Kaet. And when it did, Afura, or Ra and Ra'et energy, moved through that first landmass. It's like sunlight penetrates the ocean and heats it up. sunlight penetrates the earth, the landmass of earth, and warms it up and makes it fertile, makes it vital, makes it lively. So the energy of Ra and the energy of Ra'et penetrated that first landmass to make it fertile, make it vibrant, make it have the capacity to grow and develop, and for plant life and mineral life to develop and so forth. When Ra and Ra'et move through matter, they take on a different title. The word for flesh, as well as the word for house or place of residence in ancient Kemet, is Af or Afu, A-F or A-F-U, Af or Afu. It can also be Af, A-U, which is very important as well. So Af or Af or Afu, meaning flesh, but also house or place of residence. This is why in Akan, Afo can be the flesh of a carcass, but Afi is also a house or a place of residence. That's why in Yoruba, Afi is a palace or a house or a place of residence. Af, your flesh, is a house or place of residence for your spirit. When Ra moves through matter, he takes on the title Afu Ra. When Ra'et moves through matter, she takes on the title Afu Ra'et. And in the Berber tradition, Afu Ra'et or Afu Ra'i become Afri or Ifri, just like in ancient Kemet, Ra becomes Afu Ra. You look in the Shat Imduat and the tomb of Seti, the third hour of the night, you will see the name Afu in the plural, Afu Ra, next to the divinity Ra when he has the head of a ram, the flat-horned ram, moving through the underworld. When he goes into the underworld for the 12 hours of the night, he transforms from Ra operating through a hawk-headed divinity sitting in the boat of the sun during the day, sailing through the sky, and he becomes Afu Ra, moving within the caverns, in the underworld, in the flesh, in the house, encased in matter. And then he becomes Ra again when the boat of the sun rises. At the sunrise, he casts away the flesh of the land animal, which is the ram, and becomes the sky animal or the hawk. Again, he's just Ra. When he's moving through the air, he is Ra. When he's moving through matter, he is Afu Ra. When Ra is moving through the air, she is Ra'et. When she moves through matter, Afu Ra'et, Afu Ra'i, or Ifri, quote-unquote, cave goddess. She switches from the sun goddess to the cave goddess, just like Ra does the same thing. So Afu Ra and Afu Ra'et. When Ra and Ra'et began to move through the first land mass of earth, that first raised land, they went inside of that matter. So they took on the titles Afu Ra and Afu Ra'et for the first time. When Afu Ra moves through the Ka, that landmass, that Ka, becomes the Ka of Afu Ra, or Afu Ra Ka. When Ra'et moves through that landmass, that Ka'et becomes the Ka'et of Afu Ra'et, or Afu Ra'et Ka'et. It is the land of the creator, the land of the creatress. These are titles of deities that we worship then, titles of deities that we worship today. On the continent of Afu Ra Ka, Afu Ra'et Ka'et, as well as outside of the continent. That includes the Caribbean, that includes South America, that includes North America. We communicate with these divinities today under the same name. We get possessed by these divinities in ritual today. We communicate with these divinities and they show themselves so that we can see them and hear them and feel them today through divination. We have never stopped dealing with these forces in nature. So we have direct experiential knowledge of them. We have knowledge of Ka and Ka'et. We have knowledge of Afu Ra and Afu Ra'et, or Nyankumpon and Nyankumtong, or Odumare and Oshumare, or Da and Ida Huedo, or Dambala Huedo and Ida Huedo. We know these divinities because they are in our blood circle. They possess us. They communicate with us. The textual references from Kemet are simply confirmation and proof of what we were doing in the past. When you connect that with the languages of Apuraka, Apuraikai, today you will find the same divinities by the same names with the same functions. But then the ritual practice is key because we still deal with these deities today. So we have the knowledge of who they are. This cosmology was not manufactured by the whites and their offspring. They have no connection to it whatsoever. This cosmology is directly related to the creation of the universe and our place in the universe. So this is how we know that. And then we use the text of ancient Kemet to prove that because we have the actual Medutu. So let's see if anybody, I see somebody had a question. Yes, so one person asked, are there any words in the language of any contemporary African ethnic groups on the continent that are variations of the word Africa? Yes, so we have that directly. And first, let me first mention, when we showed the Temple of Paraka, page 50 in the text, and I said it was very important that the term af or afu means flesh, being, but it also means house or place of residence. Af or afu can also be spelled off, like A-U. A-F or A-F-U, off, afu, but also A-U. Both of those versions of the term for flesh, place of residence. Remember we said the term for island or landmass surrounded by water is off, A-U. But the term for flesh is also off, meaning A-U. That's flesh on one hand, or house or place of residence, which is that landmass on the other hand. Just like af, A-F, or afu, A-F-U, afu means house or place of residence, but it also means flesh. This is why in the Temple of Paraka, you have the actual variation, Ahraka, and it literally means the land of the beginning, the land of Ra. The priests and priestesses of Paraka or Phile said that that place, Paraka, which is in southern Kemet, which is an island, they say that's the original landmass, original island from which the creation of the world began. And they call it Ahraka, and it's in the text, the male and the female version. We show, just like in Kemet, you have Ah, meaning flesh, and also island, but then you also have Af, meaning flesh, that interchange between the Afu or Fu and the Ah. You can find the exact same thing in the Akan language. So you have the term, for example, the brother mentioned, are there any words in the language of contemporary African ethnic groups on the continent that are variations of the word Africa? We say Afraka, Afrika in the Akan tradition. Amongst, again, the people who, the region of Wenchi today, they will say, specifically the Asinie clan or the Asinie Abusia, said that when Odomankoma, which is actually Atumukopa, Atemkopa, Atemkepra from ancient Kemet, called Odomankoma and Akan, when he finished the finishing touches on the creation of the world, the people of the Asinie clan or the Asinie Abusia say that's when they came up from out of the ground at the beginning of the creation of the world. And they came up out of the ground at that region. The reason why today is called Wenchi is because some say that there was an animal that bored the hole into the ground, and that little animal they call Wenchie. And because of that, that region was later called Wenchie after that animal. But that came later. When the people came up out of the ground and they were the only people in the area, they referred to themselves as Yesri, which means we are the first people, we are the aborigines, we are from the beginning. They called their land and later their capital Afunikoko. Afunikoko is that first land, Koko, the high land, the raised land. That is in the Khan language. Afunikoko and Afrikoko, Afrika is the same title. It's the same name. It comes from Afraka, Afraikai. It's the same thing. But we go into detail about that in the book. In the part four in the book, we go into detail about that. There are two ways to say Afunikoko. That particular combination sometimes is spelled A-H-W-E-N-E, Afwini, the Afwini, and sometimes, depending on the dialect, it's spelled A-F-W-E-N-E, Afwini, Afwini or Afwini. The H-W, qua, and the F-W, qua, interchange, so Afwini and Afwini. That interchange, based on dialect, from Afwini, Koko, to Afwini, Koko, is the exact same interchange between off and off in Akan, meaning flesh or house of place of residence or island with place of residence or flesh. It's the exact same thing in English when you have terms like rough or tough or enough with the GH sounding like an F, but then you have terms like way or bow or, you know, height with the GH sounding like a huh sound. It goes from huh to fourth, the F to the huh sound. Off or off. Well, afwini, afwini is an interchange. That's key because you have, in Temple of Paraka, you have ahraka. In the papyrus of Ani and the papyrus of Unnefer, you have ahraka. The people, the specific group, the black Berbers, we get the direct name from that they still use the name today. There are two ways that they say their name. They say Afrika people or Afrika people. It will be spelled A-U-R-I-D-H-A, Afrika, or A-F-R-A, A-F-R-A-K-A, Afrika. Afrika and Afrika. Exactly the way you have the two pronunciations in Akan, Afwinikoko, Afwinikoko. In the Temple of Paraka, Afraka, which is the same version of Afraka. We have it in Paraka, you have it amongst the Berbers, you have it amongst the Akan people, both. Translation. The specific Berbers that we're talking about, and we show images of them, we also talk about the Tuareg people and so forth and the roots of their name. The Berbers, the black Berbers, prior to the whites and their offspring invading, those Berbers in Libya, they migrated from the Nile Valley region. Those people who were west of Kemet, south and west of Kemet, were the Kanat people. Kanat is an ancient title of Nubia. Kan means first, foremost, from the beginning, land of the south, and so forth. The Kanat land or the Kanit land is the southern land, the first land, and so forth. Kan means first, foremost, and so forth. It also means to count or to reckon. So the Kanat people or the Kanit people, meaning the Nubian people, are the people of the south, people of the Nubian frontier, and all of that. The Kanat people means Kan means the first people, Kan, first. But Kan also means to count, to calculate, to reckon, meaning they were the first people to count or to calculate or to reckon, to engage in the processes, calculations that are the foundation for civilization, measuring, studying, understanding things, replicating results when you're engaged in experimental efforts and so forth, so you can forge a civilization, you can understand the movements of the sun, stars, the phases of the moon, track the rising and falling of the river and so forth, and make decisions based on your calculation to make life easier, make life harmonious. Understand when it's time to plant, when it's time to harvest, when it's time to pick herbs for medicine, when it's time to procure things from the earth and so forth, when it's time to fish, when it's time to hunt, when it's not time, when to engage in ritual practices, all these kinds of things. Bring harmony back to yourself and to the community. Calculation, reckoning, counting and so forth. So kan means to count or to reckon, to calculate. Kan means first or foremost, and that's the name of the land, Kanat, ancient Nubia, the first land. Our Kan people in West Afuraka, Afuraika, and Ghana, which is about 11 million, about 9 million in Ivory Coast, when Akan people are asked, why do you call yourself Akan? They say, well, because Kan comes from the root in the tree language, the Akan language. Kan means first or foremost, meaning we were the first people, a component part of the first people created. And Kan in the tree language also means to count or to reckon or to calculate. It has those two meanings because the language comes directly from ancient Kanat or ancient Nubia. The Kanit people of Nubia are the same Akani people or Akan people who are in Ghana and Ivory Coast today. One of the largest groups that were attacked and their people were taken and brought to North, Central, South America, and the Caribbean and Europe, who were enslaved in North America. So just like the Yoruba and Ewe and Fon and Bakongo and Bambara and other people, Mende-speaking people, come directly from ancient Kanat and Kemet, Nubian Kemet, so do the Akan people. Only difference is we still use the exact same name. We use the name Akan with the same two meanings, to count and to calculate, as well as the first people. It means the exact same thing in ancient Kanat or Nubia. So this is why in the Akan cosmology you will find that Afweni Koko is the name of the place of the people when they came up out of the ground saying we were the first people on the planet and we came up out the ground out of the earth mother. We established our civilization and we made this our capital and it was called Afweni Koko and that's still in the cosmology today. Unbroken, that's just one example. Okay, let me see if we have any. Okay, if we have any, if you have a question on the phone, you can just raise your hand by clicking number one. Okay, and if you have anybody have any other questions in the chat, just post them up. Okay, so we went through that piece with regard to the cosmology. And we didn't need to go through the entire, I mean, the book is extensive, a great deal of information. We just wanted to point out the most salient points, so as you're studying the text, you'll be able to, number one, understand the cosmology, which gave birth to the term. So there, not only linguistically, we can show, and we have proven, that the term can be found in the Medutu, specifically referencing the first landmass of Earth, where that landmass is, because it's identified in the papyrus of Ani and Hunefer, because after the term Afrikai or Afrikaka is mentioned, then it says in the region, which of course today is called, or later was called Kemenu, today called Hermopolis, and actually Eshumenin in Arabic, the city of the eight. But that particular point or landmass that rose up initially, it was in the region of Kemenu, as it is said in both texts. So that pinpoints the region. Later on, Kemenu became the city of the eight, so-called Abdu'ad, sacred sanctuary of Tehuti, misnomer Thoth, and so forth. But it's talking about when that first point of the first landmass broke through the water, the first it rose up around that region. But then, of course, eventually, the entire continent would rise up out of the water. But the first point, the first landmass, point of that landmass was in the region of Kemenu, which pinpoints it in Afuraka, Afuraikai, the high point in Afuraka, Afuraikai. Of course, it's not in Asia. It's not in the so-called Near East. It's not in some mythical land called Mu that never existed. It's not in some mythical land called Atlantis that never existed. It's not in North, Central, or South America. It's not in any place except for Afuraka, Afuraikai, the continent, the mother continent, father continent, and so forth. Okay, so let's also deal briefly with another aspect of the cosmology. So you already have the cosmology which gave birth to Ka, Kaet, Ra, Raet, Afura, Akurai, and so forth. Nobody can refute the reality of the cosmology. Nobody can refute who Ka and Kayet are. Nobody can refute who Ahura and Ahuraet are, why they have the names Ahura, Ahuraet. They cannot refute that the fact that the actual terms as describing the first landmass of Earth exist in the papyrus of Ani and the papyrus of Hunefer, as well as the temple of Paraka in so-called Paraka, Philae, which is actually Paraka. And we'll go into detail about that. And we have more information that we will be publishing in the near future, which just even gives more detail in other languages on the continent as well, showing the exact same cosmology. But we have all of that. That's irrefutable information. And now you have something to, you know, you have real information that you can share with others. They can download the book for free. Let me give the website, afuraka-afuraikaet.html. So you can get it there. Download the free copy. We also have the soft cover versions of the text as well that we sell those. But then we have all the PDF versions of our text are free. So we have about 12 books, about 60 research articles. Many of them are extensive, like a research article, maybe 20 pages, 30 pages, going into detail. For example, we have a 33-page article on Ra and Ra'et, Nyonkumpon and Nyonkumton and Akan, showing the various nature and function of these divinities and how they manifest in the various cultures, specifically Akan, but also in Vodun and Yoruba and so forth. We have the article More Means Dead, which is a 29-page article that goes into detail about the term more, showing that it actually means dead. So if you're referring to yourself as a Moor, you're calling yourself a dead individual, physically dead, spiritually dead. So we go into detail about that to prove that. So we have a number of different articles, about over 60. We have about 12 books. All of those publications, the PDF versions, the ebook versions, are free downloads from the website. The soft cover versions of 7 of our books are available for purchase as well on the website, and then we will have more publications coming out in the very near future. We also have about 48 videos. Most of the videos are about 2 hours long, where we take a text and we examine the text. Just like we examine some of the information in this text, in the videos we go into more detail and we examine the various publications that we have published. So the brother said, there's a question, how does the term Afuraka, Afuraikaet incorporate the term black? I know a lot of times Moors attempt to challenge Afuraka, Afuraikaet as a term, and then they try to discredit our usage of the term black. So in the article, More Means Dead, we actually give the actual etymology of the term black. And it actually doesn't just go to Indo-European roots like the term Bel, which they would often, they look in etymological dictionaries, they find Bel of Belek, and then its roots is related to the term black and the term bleach, and then it has something to do with pale. So then they say, well, actually black really means white and it means pale and all this other nonsense. Actually, that Indo-European so-called root goes back to not Belek or Felek, like flagrant in Greek, flagrant being coming from phlegian and phleg and beleg, going back to the Indo-European root. The reason why it has something to do with black on one hand, and you can find the root there, but then bleach or bleak on the other hand, coming from the same Indo-European root, is because why is black and bleach related? Or bleach, meaning something that's bright or pale, light or brilliant. What does that have to do with black? Because when something is burned or there's fire, the fire gives off light, brilliance, paleness, illumination. But when it burns the thing, it becomes black. This is why you have something that's bleached or bleak, but then black. It comes from the same root. the fire or light or the illumination or the whiteness that they associate with the Indo-European root that relates to black. It comes from the fire, but when the fire operates and burns something, it burns it black. This is where you get those two from. But that black or palek in Indo-European languages comes from farek or falek or farek, farak, afura, afuraka. It comes from the same thing. Fura is the root of the term fara or fura or fire, and that's afu ra, the light, fire, energy moving through the afu, the flesh. So the illuminated part, the light part, is the fire. And it, when it moves through the flesh, it burns it and makes it black. So this is where that comes from. So we show the etymology of the term black in the article More Means Dead. That's on the website. And then, of course, we show the links to that. Now, black, for example, in the Akan language, B-I-R-I, Bri, which means black or dark. Of course, that comes from Brik, you know, from ancient Kemet as well, black or dark. So a person is called Obibri, which means a person, Obi, who is dark, Bri. Obibri ni is one black person. Obibri fo is a group of black people, often shortened to Ebibi fo, which is the group fo of black people. Ebibi ni, or Obibi ni, means one black person. Ebibi mine is the black or mine nation, which is a term that the Akan people use, one of the terms for Afuraka, Afuraikai, or black people in general, the continent in general, they call it Ebibi mine or Ebibri mine, the black Bri nation or mine. So with that's the literal term that we use for ourselves. Akan people call white people Oborofo. Oro means to sabotage, destructive, perverse, and so forth. Oborofo means the sabotaging people, the criminal people, and so forth. That's what the term they use for white people, meaning non-black people. The term we use for ourselves is Ebibrifo, meaning black people, Bri, meaning black or dark. Ebibri ni, black person. Ebibri mai, the black nation or black people as a collective. So we literally refer to ourselves as black. Obri not only means black or dark, but it also means powerful. So when you double it, Bri, Bri, like you call somebody Obri Bri, that means someone who is darker than the normal person, the average person, but also someone who is unusually powerful. So black means powerful, Bri means powerful, Bri means black. It is a title of the people. We refer to ourselves as black people, Ebibri Fo. So if you went to Ghana, you know people who are from Ghana and they speak Chui, they refer to themselves as Ebibi Fo, black people. And Ebibi Mai, the black nation, meaning black people as a collective, the entire continent of Afuraka, Afuraika. The idiocy of the Moorish pseudo-doctrine, talking about black means death, that's pure nonsense. That's foolishness coming from the whites and their offspring who they actually worship. They worship white people. Their leaders worship white people. They brought a foolish doctrine, a self-hating doctrine, to black people as agents of the whites and their offspring, white Turks and others, a pseudo-religion, a false religion, and this is why they propagate the nonsense that black means death and black is inferior and black and all this other nonsense. In reality, more literally in the language of Kemet means dead. Those who are socially dead, when you're alive, socially dead, mer means slave, bondsman, vassal. Those who die and go to the spirit realm, who are referred to as mer or more, are literally the damned one, means the dead. The medut, the determinative medut for a mer in the spirit realm is a man with an axe, and he's driving the axe through the middle of his forehead, a self-destructive act. Mer meaning the dead ones, meaning the damned one. So physically dead, meaning the damned one, in the spirit realm. In the physical world, being referred to as Merd, the only group of people referred to as Merd in ancient Kemet are slaves, bondsmen, vassals, servants. So Mor literally means dead. So if they say, I don't want to call myself a Negro because that means death, and I don't want to call myself black because that means death, which black doesn't mean that, actually Mor means death. So we go into detail about that in the article Mor Means Dead, which is another free publication. Okay, so let me know if that answers your question. And then we also talk about the etymology of the term Tura and fire in the in the Mor Means Dead article, as well as in the Afurakai's Origin of the Term Africa book as well. So you have more detailed information there as well. Okay, Yeni Aseda. Well, the only other thing we wanted to touch on cosmologically is, just like we talked about Ka and Kaet, the black substance of space, the male and female forces of the black substance of space, which is the divine consciousness of the supreme being. And just like you are a being, if you're an Afurakani male, you're like Amen, a miniature Amen. And an Afurakani female, you're a miniature Amenet. But you have the capacity to move energy through your body. You can direct your energy to your legs. You can direct it to your arms. You can direct it wherever you want to direct it. If you connect with your spouse, you can direct your energy to your reproductive organs so that you can create a child. You, as the great being, Amen, or Amenet, you can direct your Ra force to work for you within your body. You can direct your Ra'et force to work with you within your body. So Amen directs Ra, and Ra serves Amen. Amenet directs Ra'et, and Ra'et serves Amenet. In order to direct them, first you think about something. You fashion something in your consciousness. You employ your consciousness to generate forms, images in your mind, forms that didn't exist before, but you decide to create new forms that never existed. If you are painting something that nobody has ever painted before, you came up with a creation, what you've done is you've employed your consciousness and directed it to fashion a form within your mind, fashion an image. And your consciousness does that. You as Amen, or you as Amenet, direct your Ka, your spirit's brain, your Kaet, your spirit's brain, to fashion an image in the darkness of consciousness, something that never existed before. And once that image has been fashioned, then you direct Ra and Ra'et to give energy and life to that image, and eventually it'll be created. Just like you have the capacity to do that, the black substance of space is Ka and Kaet. It is the consciousness, male and female, of Amen and Amenet. They direct that black substance, that male and female force, to generate forms, different kinds of forms, which later become stars, planets, and so forth. And then they send Ra and Ra'et to penetrate those forms to enliven them. The Ka and Kaet is the great soul of Amen and Amenet, the divine consciousness, male and female, of Amen and Amenet. That's why the term Ka in Kemet also means soul, and Kaet also means soul, the feminine form of the term soul. So a male has a Ka, a female has a Kaet. The term Ba means spirit, the divine living energy, and Ba'et is the feminine term for that. Ra is called the great Ba in creation, the great divine living energy in creation that animates creation. Ra'et is called the great Ba'et in creation, the great divine living energy in creation that animates creation. They expand and contract in creation. So the great Ba and the great Ba'et, when they unite with the Ka and Kaet, then that's the spirit and the soul unite. The Ba and the Ka unite. So that's Ra and Ra'et uniting with the black substance, Ka and Kaet. So we go into that information in the text with regard to different variations of the term Afuraka, Afurakai. We talk about the union of Al-Sar and Ra in the same body, Afura, and Al-Sar, who is also called Ka, But when Ahura unites with Asar, who is called Ka, that's the union of Ahura and Ka in the body as a divinity, Ahura Ka. So we go into a great deal of information with regard to the cosmology, because the cosmology is the infrastructure that gives birth to the word, gives birth to the term. If you don't understand the cosmology, the interaction of the deities, the forces in nature, and why they have the names that they have. Okay. And just as a notice, there's only a few minutes, 2 minutes, if you wanted to stay in overtime. There's about a minute left. If the live stream will cut off in about a minute, you can call in. However, if you want to stay on overtime on the phone, 657-383-0635. 60 seconds, 657-383-0635. We're not going to do a lot of overtime tonight. We just wanted to let people know that, because in about a half a minute, it will cut off. So that's the information for Afuraka, Afraikai. Again, look on our website for updates on our upcoming presentation. We have a presentation in Maryland, June 22nd, Camp Springs, Maryland, that is already on the website. And on July 5th, we will be in Hartford, Connecticut. Tomorrow, we have Egua Marketplace, Dr. Iya Ajua, who is an author, educator, creator of Acclaim, the model dealing with African-centered education, 9 p.m. on this channel tomorrow. We can talk a little bit about our project going on for the people who are still on the phone. We have the publication. We have the services. We have the articles, the books, publications, articles and services, Akumasa, which is substance abuse abstinence, and the Afurakani, Afurakaini community, a ritual approach utilizing ancestral religion for that process to overcome substance abuse, overcome addiction. We have Akumadai, the same ritual process to deal with the negative effects and controlling aspects of domestic abuse so people can overcome what they've gone through and not be sucked back into that cycle, that vicious cycle of domestic abuse. We have Akuma Tra, which is trauma, recovery, alignment, people who have gone through various forms of trauma, transcarnational trauma, many of us, which affects the way we think, the way we operate, our emotions and so forth, how to get in harmony with order, realign with the Kra, or Kra Wa, the soul, the divine consciousness, Ka and Kaet, so we can overcome the negative effects of intergenerational and transcarnational trauma so we can move forward and function harmoniously in the world and overcome some of these misdiagnosed conditions, like people who are misdiagnosed with things like major depressive disorder and bipolar and things like that, given medication, hooked on medication, suffering the negative effects of medication, but their lives have not transformed. Very often people are dealing with unresolved ancestral issues, and through ritual practice, we have everything within our culture we need to overcome that. For those who want to support the work that we are doing, you can go to our website, to the Nhoma page, N-H-O-M-A, so ojidafo.com/nhoma.html, and you can get to that link on the front page of the website, ojidafo.com. We have the soft cover versions of our publications, as well as the PDF versions. The PDF versions, again, are free. You can purchase the soft cover versions. They range from $8 to $11. They're inexpensive, detailed information. We're using the sale of the soft cover publications on one hand to fund our operations. That includes doing free presentations in different cities. We will be traveling to a number of different cities this summer, beginning on June 22nd. We're working on an event in Nevada, which hopefully we can get that done for the weekend of June 28th. We'll be in Maryland the previous weekend of June 22nd. The following weekend of July 5th, we'll be in Connecticut, and we're working on other dates for different cities. If you want us to come to your city, just contact us via the website, ojinafo.com. Go to the Contact Us section, and we can deal with that. We do not charge a speaker's fee to do presentations, and we do not charge an admissions fee for our events. We also give away, typically what we have done is given away free copies of a soft cover version of the particular book that we're speaking on that day. We've done that at a number of different events in different cities. We've given away over 300 of our soft cover books in that fashion since September, and we're going to continue that process when we go to Maryland, in Nevada, in Connecticut, and everywhere we go. So when you purchase the soft cover versions of a book, one or more, then you're assisting us with that process to give that information out to our people. For those people who don't have internet access, or people who just been turned on to ancestral religion or culture, and this is brand new to them, and they may be, wary about, what's being presented initially. But once they get that information, they can study, they realize the value of it. So your support of that, purchasing the soft cover versions, also assists us to give free workshops to people who can't afford to come to workshops, people who need, healing, people who need direction. This is why we provide all of our services for free. So we also have the distributor program where you can purchase the soft cover versions of our books at a wholesale price, and then you can sell them retail to your friends, family, coworkers, other people you're around, and you'll be working for yourself. You'll be independent entrepreneur. You'll just be purchasing the books wholesale and then selling them wherever you are, whatever region you're in. So you can contact us about that as well. And we also have, for those who joined the Ning site, who are part of the Ning site, we sent out the email about our investment program, the EGWA investment program, where you can receive a 20% return on a small investment. You can join the Ning site to get information on that, as well as give us a call at 202-717-0050. But the Ning site is apuraka-apurakayat.ning.com. That is our network, our private network, social network, where people join, create profiles, post information, post videos, dealing with knowledge. We post our articles, we post our updates. There are discussions on every aspect of ancestral religion, culture, nation building, and so forth. So you can join that network. We'll approve you, and then you can also get the information about the investment program as well. So may I say for everybody coming on the call and on the live stream, remember tomorrow, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, same channel, we have EGWA Marketplace, Dr. Iya Ajua, and we already posted the notification on Facebook and the Ning site, but we will be sending out reminders. And we will see you again next week at this time for Ojira Medase. It's up.